Greetings from Podcastville. It's Wednesday, June 12th. The podcast is brought to you by Tushy. Listen, Tushy is the best bidet out there, portable bidet that you could get your hands on. You're asking me, Joey, what the hell is a Tushy? Tushy sprays water directly into your asshole and removes the poop completely, so you're not sitting on bacteria that leads to nasty things like hemorrhoids, yeast infections, UTI, itchy assholes, and skid marks. Bidets are common in the rest of the world. A bidet saves you money on toilet paper. Still, you use a little toilet paper to pat dry, but the amount is negligible. You understand me? Why would you want to fucking clog your toilets? Tushy sprays your ass with fresh water. And it's not toilet water either. It connects to a water supply behind your toilet to spray your dirty fucking parts clean with fresh water. It's the same water you brush your teeth. Now, for Father's Day, Tushy's running a little special. It's an upgrade. You're going to get a bidet, some bamboo bum towels, a travel case, and a t-shirt. But do me a favor. It all starts with you by going to HelloTushy.com. Right now, go to HelloTushy. Look at all the bidets starting at $69. You get 10% off when you go to HelloTushy.com and you're pressing code CHURCH, C-H-U-R-C-H. That's 10% off your bidet for dad. You want dad's asshole to smell like a fucking bouquet of fucking roses? Start with HelloTushy.com right now. Press in CHURCH and get 10% off your order. The CHURCH is also brought to you by Onnit. When it comes to supplements, this is one of the only companies I trust. Why? Because they stand behind their products. Go to Onnit.com right now. Take a great selection. Take a look at the great selection of supplements. From the protein powder to the Shroom Tech Immune to the Shroom Tech Sport. You make the judge. You read up on those quadricep mushrooms or whatever the fuck they are. But anyway, when you go to Onnit, you see something that you want, do yourself a favor. You're looking to start a new life. You're looking, oh, I can't focus. Alpha Brain is the way to go. Go on Onnit.com right now. You see something you like on the checkout, press in.
CHURCH.
And get 10% off your order. It's that quickly. And it gets delivered to your house. Who's better than us? Who's better than you? Nobody. Lee, kick this fucking mule.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Nice and smooth. Taking it back to 93 with Joe Coy up in this motherfucker.
Hey.
104 degrees today in the valley.
Hey.
A beautiful day to be alive.
It doesn't matter how hot it is in L.A. You're in L.A. Think of it that way.
I was in New Orleans last week. The humidity. Here we go. Shake that ass. It's Wednesday, bitches. Powder it up.
That's Coco right there. That's the lead singer, Coco. She's amazing. Listen to the vocals on this. You are so fine, so fine. You blow my mind. You do with the things you do to me. She's not fine, not fine. She's not fine. Things you do for me, but I love I'm so into you. Oh.
It's so
that just
weird.
Brought me back, man.
Oh, my God.
That's when I had hair. I'm not even joking.
You know what else I loved? What was the Never Gonna Get It?
Oh, my God. En Vogue. Went to go see them at the Aladdin Theater.
Did you really?
Yep. I went and saw SWV, too.
Where?
I was living in Vegas at the time. So I was addicted to all of that. That whole New Jack Swing movement came out of New York. Virginia Beach, New York. Teddy Riley, you know, when he collaborated with SWV. All those beats right there, just fucking amazing. That's that era will never come back.
No.
I mean, they tried, like Bruno started coming out with this, you know, with his 24 karat, you know, that was a throwback to that movement. But that movement was so special because it was kind of like the separation from R&B of the 80s, the traditional, you know, the new additions and all that. And it went to like this hip hop feel. It was just like this, that street vibe. You know what I mean? Mary J. Blige, SWV, Guy. Blackstreet, like it was just raw.
You grew up on all that.
Oh, I loved it, man. Jodeci, are you kidding me?
Jodeci was tremendous,
dude. One of my favorite. I'm sorry to keep talking, Joey,
no,
but when I met Al B. Shore at Jerry's Deli, I literally paid for his meal, and it was Al B. Shore and Heavy D, and I paid for the meal, And I literally walked up and I was just like, hey, man, thank you for everything. Like, you changed music. You guys changed music. And thank you for that. And that's that was on me. That was my way of saying thank you. They always say never meet your heroes, but I had to do that. Like, that music right there was everything to me. That's all I had, you know. All I did was listen to music.
No rock music?
I mean, I did, but I'm more of the, if it's a hit, then I gravitate towards it. Like when AC/DC comes out with, you know, Back in Black, or, you know what I mean? Pearl Jam, you know what I mean? Any of that, whenever it's like that, then I gravitate towards it. But I don't go deep into the B-sides of it. I'm a Beatles fan. I'm a, you know what I mean? I'm not rock. I'm more of that R&B soul.
I'm just blown away that so many comedians come in here. You throw on music and they fucking spill their guts.
Yeah.
Why didn't you get into music? You are like sort of a DJ.
I love it, man. You know, I think also because my Filipino side, my mom's side, it's all about music. It's little. My sister became a singer in Vegas. For 20 years, she was a lounge act. You know, that was my first time actually tasting a Vegas stage was when my sister was in between a set. And she goes, hey, my brother does comedy. And I went up at the Stardust. Remember the Stardust before they tore that shit down? So I went up at the Stardust and it was a bar. They were playing a bar. This is so Vegas right here. It was a bar. And behind the bar where they put the bottles was her band. Like, they literally gave her this desk right here was their stage. They had a fucking drum, two guitars, and my sister singing lead with the guitar player. And they were doing it. They were doing four sets a night, you know what I mean? From 8 to 1 a.m. And then she brought me up one night. And I remember I was, you know, I was being dirty. It was my first, you know, I was, you know how it is when you first start. It was just dirty, dirty, dirty. And then the pit boss came and he was like, hey, get him off the stage. What the fuck? Can't be talking like that. We got people gambling. But that was my first taste of a Vegas stage. And I was, that was it. I was addicted.
Now, you grew up in Seattle.
I grew up in Tacoma, which
high
is 45.
Right.
Tacoma, which is like 45 minutes from Seattle.
Never did comedy up there?
No, before, man. I told everyone I was going to be one, though.
No shit.
I used to sign the phone book. I was living with my roommate, William, and I used to sign the phone book. This is how old I am, just for your listeners. I'm very fucking old. I'm 48.
You're beautiful.
Thanks, man. And I was signing the phone book. You know, just signing every page. Phone. And, you know, that's back then when people needed phone books. You know, we didn't have our phones back then. You needed a fucking phone book. And I remember he was looking for, like, something in the phone book. He was like, yo, stop fucking signing the phone book. What, are you going to be famous? He said that to me. And I was like, yeah, you'll see. You'll see, yeah. I'm practicing my signature now. I was joking, but actually underneath
not
it.
Really.
No, man. Not I would really. And really I was actually resented him for that. I remember I used to, you know, we don't talk anymore, by the way, William and I. He was my best friend all the way through, but that's when you realize, when you get to that fork in the road, you're just like, you're so fucking driven that shit isn't going to help me. You know what I mean? That kind of fucking, what, are you going to be famous? That's not going to help me. That little, whatever you're saying right there does not help me. That brings me down. So I don't need that. Let me go. And that's what I did. I let him go. It was a sad day. My sister, you know, still talks to him, but I don't want to go back to that. Like, I'm so fucking focused, and I just want the right pieces around me. I don't have time for that bullshit, you know?
You know,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go that
no,
way.
No, I want your soul. When you come on this podcast, I want your soul. I don't want you to tell me what they want you to hear.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me what's in your soul. You know, it's weird that you were doing that subconsciously.
Yeah.
But 10% of you knew what you were doing. I didn't have the balls to do that job.
Yeah.
Because I would have gotten too disappointed if I would have failed.
Mm.
The disappointment would have been too much.
Yeah.
So I went more a la, I'm not paying attention, so I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. But did you ever watch the 30 for 30 with Jim Valvano?
Oh, yeah, man.
The first practice, he made them cut the nets.
Yeah.
To practice being champions.
That's so amazing.
That right there, you look at that and go, how come I never thought of that?
Yeah, man.
He made them cut the nets to see how it feels to cut the nets down.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a taste of that. That went into their subconscious, and it just
clicked. Yo, they manifested
it. And it works. It works.
And you know what's crazy, Joey, is how he did that in the 80s. Like right now, a lot of people are kind of in touch with that now about manifestation and really believing in it and telling yourself. And But imagine back then when that wasn't out.
No.
There was only a few people that really thought like that. You know what I mean? And they did it. And that he was one of them, man. I don't even think he told people he had cancer. Did he?
No.
You know what I mean? I don't even know if he actually knew or what, but I think he kept that to himself.
Kept it to himself.
Right? And it's just like fucking amazing. It's just so amazing that I don't know. It's cool to see people manifest their future and really take in a hold of whatever it is that they're passionate about.
Fucking, what's that dancer that went bankrupt and whatever? It doesn't matter.
MC Hammer?
MC Hammer.
MC Hammer.
Used to sell albums at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
People would say he would back his car up and sell albums out of the store. Jesus.
Bro, I was watching a documentary on Hammer. Oh, yeah. You are good, Joey.
That's true.
God damn. Yeah, because I was watching the documentary and he had a deal with Capitol Records. And he turned it down. I'm going to make up a number. Let's just say it was $1 million deal, okay? Which is a lot of money for a rapper back then, right? And he turned it down because he said, I can sell more of them out of the back of my trunk outside of a nightclub. He would literally take his single that he produced himself, go to a nightclub, beg the DJ to play it or tip him a little bit of money, make him play it in rotation. And once that song came on, he went to the floor and just started dancing because he knew everyone was going to watch him dance. And then literally he would just wait outside, and as the nightclub would close, he would just stand at the back of his car and people would walk up to him. Yo, you were the guy that was dancing. He was like, yo, that was my song. Boom, and he'd sell it out of the back of his car. That's the shit, man.
You know, all that shit always affects me. It always touches me. Jamie Foxx called his name Jamie Foxx. It sounded like a girl, and he knew he would get stage time.
What?
That's genius.
See, what kind of fucking thought process is that? That's amazing.
When you hear that shit, you go, oh, that's how I got to run this game. I got to be that slick to run this game.
Yeah.
He would go to the Comedy Store, and he knew if he put his real name down, he was a guy.
Yeah.
So if he put Jamie Foxx, they thought he was a girl.
You got to be kidding me. That's genius.
And his grandmother. You never saw that actor's studio?
Uh-uh.
His grandmother used to make him play the piano every day.
Oh.
When he was a kid. She'd tell him, someday you're going to need this fucking piano. And he ended up playing Ray Charles.
Dude.
That's the shit that you sit there and go, man, this is why you have to pay attention. This is why.
Yeah, man.
All that stuff. Even when you watch Rocky, he didn't manifest himself.
Mm-hmm.
He went back. What fucked Rocky up, because I was watching it the other night. It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
But think what changed him. The button that changed him is when he went to the arena and he told the guy that his shorts were colored. The color were wrong on the shorts. And the guy took a puff of a cigar and says, it doesn't really matter. I think you're going to give us a good fight. And he just looked at him like it just clicked in his head. Oh, shit. And he was half retarded, Rocky. But he let it affect him. He went back, woke up Adrian.
Yeah.
He woke Adrian up and he told him he was scared. And that was it. He went in there to fight for his debt.
Yeah.
He said, I'm fighting for my debt. All those type of stories are everyday stories that you have to pay attention to as a young man to see how to get across that peak.
Yeah.
These are the little things he had to do. Up to about 2 years ago, I thought Sylvester Stallone was just a lucky guy.
Mm.
And then I started watching the Rambo started coming on.
Yeah.
I started remembering the Rockies and then the Expendables and go, he's up to Rocky 8.
Yeah.
I just watched Creed 2.
Yeah.
On the plane.
That's right. I didn't even think about that. Creed 2 is part of the Rocky franchise.
8 Rockies.
Holy shit.
I think it's 8. Don't get mad at me. But think about what you have to do to create what he created.
Yeah.
He created years later, you know, you got the John Wick series, you got the other guy that's got a great series. But nobody's really done what Rocky's done.
Mm-mm.
4 or 5 Rambos, and he's doing Rocky 9.
Yeah.
He's 70, ain't he? 70?
And the Expendables, you almost said it, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing
The Expendables are up to almost 4,
and
I think.
It was 3 or 4,
Dude, that's amazing.
You know, here's a guy that gave away his dog because he couldn't feed him.
Mm.
Here's a guy that took a script and said, no, you're not going to let Ryan O'Neal play Rocky. No.
That's crazy. I didn't even know that.
No, yeah. He fought him to the end for like $100,000. When they shot that scene
But he was the director of Rocky, right?
No.
I thought he directed Rocky.
He wrote it, I think, right?
He wrote it. See who directed Rocky.
So then he directed Rocky 2 then, right? fuck. This whole time I thought he was.
I don't think he had juice to like four to start telling motherfuckers.
Oh, really?
He could direct.
Oh, man, I've been telling the wrong story this whole time.
It says John G. Avildsen.
Oh, I've been telling the wrong story, man. I always thought like Stallone was one of those wrote it, directed. You know what I mean? I thought Rocky was his baby.
Well, he's got a little bit of whatever in his past.
Uh-huh.
People haven't raised their hand. I just heard a very interesting story. I heard a story that, and my buddy's going to kill me for saying it because he listens to the podcast, that Sylvester Stallone had a script. No. Sylvester Stallone went to Bayonne to train with Chuck Wepner.
Ooh.
And Chuck Wepner had a notebook with all his notes in it. And when he went to train, Chuck Wepner's trainer told him no because he had done porn. So Sylvester Stallone took Chuck Wepner's notebook and he wrote Rocky.
Really?
Yeah. And then The Expendables was one of Eddie Bravo's students who wrote it.
What?
Paul Sylvester Stallone took him to a meeting. Sylvester said yes. He never heard from the guy again. And one day he's sitting in his living room when a commercial comes on showing The Expendables. So he sued him. And if you remember The Expendables, they said written by Sylvester Stallone, and they put that guy's name. And he went on to write Godzilla and some other stuff. But the original story is he got that presented to Sylvester Stallone.
This is crazy.
Sylvester Stallone said, yeah, because it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day.
Didn't he have something like that with Rocky, too? With Rocky?
Something. That's what I'm saying. That's the Chuck Wepner.
Oh, that's the Chuck. Oh.
That's the Chuck Wepner.
No
thing.
Shit.
Chuck Wepner was like, listen, whatever happened, you didn't protect yourself. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
You should have known better when to win your lunch. You should have been prepared who you're dealing with in this city. But still, he kept it alive. You know, it's like when they always said, well, Led Zeppelin took a lot of music. Well, you know what, man? I know they didn't take. You know, it's like when they got accused of taking Stairway to Heaven. They probably did. They probably did take that melody. But who's going to overturn that in today's world? When you hear the first three chords of Stairway to Heaven,
yeah,
you know, everybody in high school lost a friend. They put that album on. Yep. You're going to reverse it now? And
yeah.
You know how many people got buried with Led Zeppelin fucking four or whatever the song that album is on four, I think. They call it something, that album. You know how many people got buried with that Led Zeppelin album? But these stories I tell you about Jamie Foxx, and I got 1,000 other ones that really, you know, Ricky Ricardo, was his parents sent him from Cuba to a private school because Batista was out of control in the United States, in Cuba, out of control.
Yeah.
And they knew they were next. Either Batista was going to shoot him. So they wanted to protect Ricky Ricardo. So they sent Ricky Ricardo. What's his name in real life?
Desi Arnaz.
Desi Arnaz.
Yeah.
Was a private school in Miami.
This is before he was Desi Arnaz?
Before he was Desi Arnaz.
Was he famous in Cuba?
No. He was a kid that sang and played the guitar.
And he got him out of there.
Good looking. He got him out of there. But guess who his schoolmate was in Miami?
Who?
Capone's son.
Get out.
So Christmas time. Everybody's going to their respected houses for Christmas, and there's this poor little Cuban kid going, I got nowhere to go. Capone's father said, your son said, you're coming with me. Took him to Chicago. It's 1940. They never saw what a fucking Cuban was before. And this guy walks in with pointy shoes saying, hello. And Capone fell in love with him. And one day he called Capone and said, I want to play this club in New York. Capone made the call, and that's the story of Desi Arnaz.
Are you fucking kidding me? That's a real story.
That's a real story.
So, and then somewhere he met Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
And which is even more crazy.
Crazier. The opportunities never end. So
never ends.
Now, all those type of stories. Now, before I went to prison, you guys are going to laugh.
Yeah.
Before I got locked up, I probably went to 3 Anthony Robbins seminars.
Before?
Yeah. And they just put me in jail. That's it. They just made my fucking crime game stronger.
Yeah.
Anthony Robbins like motivated me to steal more. I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah. Like, oh, man, in those days, good.
It was like your eyeball saw it, and then it registered in your mind and set off a certain trigger. I don't know what trigger he set off. I couldn't stop snorting coke. Anthony Robbins pushed me over the side.
That's funny.
I walked down one of those coals. I couldn't stop snorting coke.
You motivated me to snort more coke.
You motivated me to kidnap a motherfucker, cocksucker. Yeah. Three fucking things. I manifested it and I became a kidnapper.
It's hysterical.
Anthony Robbins. So I don't talk with Anthony Robbins no more. He just talks my I wouldn't talk to him if you paid me to kiss it.
Yeah.
Fucking sexual accuser.
I was gonna say he might be going to jail.
Yeah, he's going to jail too.
Is he?
Something happened.
He got like four or five people accusing him right now.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, dog. These guys are fucking disgusting.
I was just watching this thing on Instagram. It's one of those late night wormholes that you get in where you just start feeding, going through the feed. And it was this guy that bought his private jet from the guy that has the studio. Fuck me.
Harvey.
No, the one that does all this is bad pod right now. The one that does what the fuck is his name? He does what is the name? The black actor, he does the gray wig and Madea, what's the name of that?
Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry, fuck he's me, I'm sorry. Too? Can we cut all that, please?
No, he's in trouble.
Too. No, he's not. He just sold his plane. The thing is, he just sold his plane, but the guy that bought the plane is one of those evangelists who asked for money.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Getting money from everybody. And this news reporter went up to him and was like, hey, we heard you bought Tyler Perry's private jet. How does that feed the poor? I mean, like, how does all your money that you said that you need to help feed the poor, how does that justify this private jet you just bought from Tyler Perry? And it's just like, these guys are just such fucking creeps. You know what I mean? It's like when you hear stories like Anthony Robbins,
like four
or
five planes. It's like that's creepy.
Yeah, you hear something like, you know, because you see Anthony Robbins and he's motivating people and blah blah blah, and then you hear this shit and you're just like, everything he talked about just went to shit.
Went to shit.
Yeah, and it's just like this evangelist. It's just like, you know, here you are. You're manipulating people that are, you know, that are in need, and you know they're desperate and they're on their last, you know, whatever it is, and they give you their dollar or whatever it is that you ask for. Then you go buy a fucking jet from Tyler Perry. It's like, fuck you, man.
Are you religious anymore?
I am when the holiday comes. You know what I mean?
Did you raise your son religious?
My son, yeah, he goes to a Catholic school, but I think it's because my mom's Filipino, and it was in
right,
me,
right. No,
and
that's,
it's like
that's right.
And it's just
I mean, listen, I'm a Catholic in my heart. But if you think I'm going to get up on a Sunday and go sit with those hypocrites,
no.
You're out of your fucking mind.
No.
I'm not going to go sit in the first three rows. All those guys are cheating on their wives.
Yeah.
Or they're fucking some little 12-year-old, or they're doing something that ain't fucking right. And, you know, I feel like the people who sit closer to the priest, they're the biggest fucking scumbags.
The closer you are.
People who sit in the first five pews are fucking scumbags. They're the ones.
Isn't that crazy?
Go through life and they wear the suit and they lie. When I go to church now, if I go to church.
Yo, that, Joey, I'm sorry to interrupt you. That's fucking genius thought. You're so right. The closer, fuck, man, I've been saying this forever, man. It's the people that put themselves closer to goodness are the ones that are hiding shit. I call those fuckers magicians. You know, they're like modern day magicians. You know, it's like, I'm so evil, but here's a smoke cloud. You know what I mean? And divert the attention to someone else that's doing some wrong shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not bad. Look, this guy's bad. You know, it's those people that sit on the soapbox and preach
and
about
they,
how
and,
bad people are. They're the fucking worst.
They take money and they take the communion.
Yeah, man.
And they do the whole thing and they invite the father over for dinner.
Yeah.
And why I'm saying this is because in 87 I sold cars. And this guy came in once, an insurance guy, and we started talking. Now when he came in, he was 40. I was 25. He was with a chick that was my age.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at convertible Chryslers.
Hmm.
I remember the Chrysler convertible was big.
Yeah.
And then I became friends with the guy. I would call him up, and one day he goes, you know, I know your father-in-law from Sacred Heart Church. And I went to church that Sunday, and who's in the first fucking pew?
That one right there.
Shaking everybody's hand next to his fat, overgrown fucking wife that's 400 pounds. And they're just shaking and hugging people. I'm like, this motherfucker is
just being so phony.
And I told my father-in-law, I threw him under the bus. And my father-in-law goes, that guy's been a piece of shit for 30 years. You don't have to tell me nothing. He goes, I can't stand that he sits in the first fucking row.
That's so true.
And that's when I put that. But Filipinos, Cubans, you know, our country is a mixture of everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody has gotten laid in our country and left their seed.
Yeah.
Whether it's the Africans, the Chinese, Irish. There's so many different, you know.
You go to Asia, you will find a Gonzalez. And that's the truth.
That's the truth.
You'll find a Santos.
Well, wasn't Tony Gonzalez Filipino?
Yeah, man. I have a Gonzalez in my family. Yeah,
Gonzalez.
I have a De La Fuente and a Santos,
and
too.
And I know a Diaz, but spelled with an E.
Yeah.
In Philippine. Mm-hmm. I met him years ago. He still talks to me on Facebook and he comes to the shows.
Isn't that crazy?
It's a fucking crazy place. But the Catholicism level, like Edwin San Juan's uncle was a priest.
Yep.
You know, he has another uncle that went to church every day. The people that have Mercy's godparents, they're church people.
Yeah.
They don't miss church. They drink till 4 a.m. and play dominoes and eat lumpia.
Yeah.
And the whole fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's ready for
Mahjong.
Church. Mahjong.
They'll go.
The carne, the fucking really good beef.
Yeah.
Asada.
Yeah.
That fucking
beef
shit.
Beef tapa.
That shit puts you in the... I don't fuck with the pigeon.
No.
It scares me a little bit.
I don't think we eat pigeon, Joey.
Yes they do. Filipinos eat pigeons. You always got magicians outside the house. Fucking with sticks.
We got
fucking. We want our pigeons back.
You got a magician protest.
You go to Filipinos. You see magicians out there.
Hilarious.
We want our lumpia back. You can't eat our utensils. Remember last year when they made that movie Clown?
Yeah.
About 2 weeks later, this is not a joke. It was in the paper. They had a parade. A thing where a bunch of clowns went down to the protest that movie because they were losing work for the summer. Remember it came out like
Stop
in
it.
April.
You're talking about it?
Yes.
So come
when that
on.
Movie came out, people were canceling clowns left and right.
That's
so clowns
funny.
Said, that's it, enough. And they went down the
fucking... clown was Dangerfield? The clown was Dangerfield?
2,000 clowns went downtown with suits on saying, take the movie out. We're losing summer work and shit because the movie came out and fucked up all the... People were canceling clowns.
That's funny.
Like, fuck it. Get Aladdin.
Yeah. Get Aladdin. Get a Power Ranger.
Yeah. Go get a fucking Aladdin. Get a Power Ranger.
Oh, my God.
It's some of the shit people do.
Is your daughter into, like, for the birthdays, hiring, like, a Power Ranger or a Spider-Man?
No.
Because my son was never into that.
No.
Never.
No, it embarrasses me.
It, man.
It drives her
crazy. I went to a birthday party with my son, and they had a Spider-Man with, like, regular Nikes on. And my son was just, that's when I knew my son was cool. He was like, does Spider-Man have Nikes on? But all the other kids were just buying into it. Oh, fucking Spider-Man. But my son was like, does Spider-Man have Nikes on?
There's always one motherfucking kid that's like, I don't know about this Santa Claus.
Yeah.
My daughter's not big on Santa Claus.
My son either.
She's like, hi, how you doing? You want to sit on my lap? Fuck
nah,
you.
No.
Not really. I'm not in the fucking mood to sit
on my
lap.
Nah, Santa, I saw you first row at the church the other day. I know what kind of Santa you
That's
are.
That's right. It's crazy.
I love that analogy that you said that because now that I think about it.
It broke my heart.
No, I'm talking about the seating.
Broke my heart.
In the church. Because literally, I'm the one that sits in the back.
I broke my heart. I sit right in the back because I'm a sinner.
Yeah, I'm a sinner.
It's never going to change. I sit in the last pew. When I go to church twice a year, I get up on Sunday early. It's 7:30 mass. I do a couple bong hits.
Yep.
And I go down and just sit in the back and look at the glass.
I
love the glass, the 12 steps. I love all that shit. I was raised on that shit. But all the politics of the church and talking and all that, I don't want to be involved.
Yeah,
I don't want to be fucking involved at all. And I still remember I made my confirmation when I was 30 years old.
Oh.
When I got divorced, I was like, I got the devil in me. So here I am sitting with 12-year-olds at a confirmation class every Thursday afternoons and shit. I'm 27 years old.
Can you shoot all of your stories?
High as a kite.
Could you shoot your stories,
high
please?
As a kite with 12-year-olds learning about fucking Jesus.
This is fucking great.
No, I believe. I believe in it 150%. I believe that there's a God.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jesus came down here and fought the Jews hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
I think it's a little stretched out.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Is that what
You know what I was always thinking, Joey, is... before the internet and before all this shit, right? Like, I feel like Jesus, this is me just tripping one day. I feel like Jesus was like, imagine if David Blaine was back then. Imagine David Blaine back then during when Jesus was around. Maybe that's who that was. Because right now you see David Blaine, you're like, all right, cool. The internet, you know, we know that that's tricks. We can go to like, howdidhedothat.com and it'll show us. But imagine back then when there was no internet.
Whoa. Do they have a how they do that? That kind
of? No, I'm just saying, they got that one magic show where they were like giving off the
right,
how they
fucked
did
the
it.
Magicians. They were
they were fucking them.
Fox came
out. Yeah, you remember
years
that?
Ago. Yeah.
The unmasked magician. Right, he was giving off all their secrets and shit. But like, imagine before all that when, you know, you were David Blaine and you were showing people all this trickery. Like, wouldn't you be like a prophet? You know what I mean? I mean, how old is magic? It's probably older than Earth. You know what I mean? Like, if you really think about it, you know, it's in the Bible, sorcery, wizards, and blah, blah, blah. Maybe that was what David Blaine was. Maybe he was just a really good, he was a good guy doing some Jesus Christ stuff. Do I sound stupid right now?
No. You have to look at it from all different.
You got to look at it that way. Because if you look at it like us today, and I'm, yeah, no, David Blaine would not be a prophet. But imagine him doing that shit back then. Minds would be fucking blown.
You wouldn't even have to be that good.
No. You know how they say walk on water? Have you seen David Blaine stand on a fucking telephone pole 300 feet for 4 days without sleep? Like, imagine doing that back then. You know? Not knowing any, you know, I don't know. I'm just tripping.
No, it's the truth. I can't even, you know, it's funny. I started doing comedy in Wyoming. I started in Denver, so.
Wow, you were Eastern Washington.
No, I started in Denver, so when you start.
Oh, Denver.
When I first got on stage, was the Comedy World.
Wow.
And then I started getting a few gigs like in 93. And I would go to like Wyoming, Nebraska. That was my turf.
Yeah.
No New Mexico, Arizona, but like one-nighters. But I remember being in some part of Wyoming.
Yeah.
And Tribble had a magician. And they were like they were
tripping.
Like they were tripping.
Yeah.
People were tripping.
Like on the verge of worship.
And the guy was creepy. You could see that he had kids in the trunk. Something wasn't right with this guy. He had to leave in a hurry.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that night. I was like, man, those people in Wyoming that night, they really couldn't handle a magician. Like they were like, they didn't laugh, they didn't clap. They were like, it's like throwing a hypnotist in there. And then one night I'm at a comedy club. And you ever been in a comedy club where you're about to go up?
Yeah.
And there's like two or three away from you. And you're just focusing on your jokes. But you're listening.
Yeah.
You could hear what the comic is saying. Jerry Rocha said a joke about being in Texas Arcana. And a magician went up. And some guy in the audience kept saying, take him off. It's voodoo. he ripped the paper in half. That's Satan's son. He goes, the people went. And I asked him after, I go, is that a true story? I was dying.
Yeah.
Because I've actually seen people react to that.
Yeah.
Like in small communities, like they didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
And I asked him, he goes, Joey, you should have been there. The guy not only complained during the whole show, he called the cops.
Really?
Yeah. The guy in here is a Satan lover. He's doing magic tricks. Only people who believe in Satan do that type. The guy called the cops on the magician.
That's so funny. 911.
I
think Satan's on stage right now.
What comic book magicians do you remember?
I opened for, you know, my sister used to open for a magician. That was the funniest shit ever.
So a just, band.
She was a solo. And that he hired her just to like MC and introduce the next bit. So when he would go backstage and change into his next magic outfit, she would sing and then go, are you guys ready for more Amazing Danny or whatever the fuck his name was? It was the old Hooters. You know where Hooters is in Vegas now?
Yes.
That used to be called the San Remo Hotel, and they had just a cheesy magic show. Right? I hope he's probably a fan of yours, so I'm pretty sure he's going to hear this shit. But he had she opened for him. It was, man, we would go and laugh, man. My sister's like, please, you got to come watch this. People are fucking amazed by some of this shit. And it's fucking awful magic. And it was awful magic. There was one bit where she had to like shove a chow. You know, is it the chow that has the black tongue? It looks like a big lion, like a dog lion, right? He would make a chow appear. And she was the one that was shoving it through the curtain. And then the crowd would go, oh my God, that's fucking amazing. And I'm just sitting there watching this shit like, are you fucking kidding me right now? But that was literally a Vegas show. I think it was like an afternoon show, like 5 o'clock. She would do the show.
People can't get tickets for Wayne Newton.
No, they couldn't get tickets for Roy.
Wayne Newton sold out. God damn it! I came on. I can't wait to see his rendition.
I'll go watch.
I did it my way.
I love seeing people who don't like. I went to a Christmas party once, and Steve, Simone, and Joey were there, and they ran out of the room.
I'm Catholic. I'm a magician.
You're done.
No, I don't want to see magicians.
They freak you out.
They make me nervous. I'm a Catholic.
He was doing card tricks.
Don't make my, like, don't make my coke disappear. Make my coke disappear.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
There's only one way to do that.
They fuck it. I don't know. Something about magicians, clowns. They just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ventriloquists get creepy sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, ventriloquists freak me out.
They're great, but they get creepy sometimes.
Yeah.
I have a couple friends who became ventriloquists from comedy, like, they can sell tickets to comics. They became ventriloquists. They fucking sell shit out.
Yeah.
They sell shit out on a Saturday night in the fucking, you know, in like off Route 52 in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
What was the name of that town? Because that used to be a comedy club.
Uh-huh.
But Saturday night late, he had that Santos guy. And that guy, he was R-rated.
Uh-huh. He's a hypnotist, R-rated hypnotist.
And he sells them out, Jack.
Really?
And he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. I met him a couple times. He's always been very nice. I would open for him. Because as a feature act, you would feature for the headliner. He had three rooms at the Club 56 or 52.
I don't know where this is.
This is in Boston 15 years ago. Wow. This guy's dead and buried.
What's his name?
Ron. Ron something. Selma, Ron DeLuca, Ron something like that. A comic here said, you're never going to get into Nick's or the other place, the big Bill Bloomer writes.
Comedy Connection?
The Comedy Connection.
Yeah.
But this guy loves L.A. comics. So he brought me out with Stanhope.
Nice.
So that's he would bring me right out there. With Stanhope, and I would do... You did like 7 shows in 2 days as a feature.
Jesus.
You know, at 100 a show.
Yeah, man.
And he would give you like a $200 bonus. You could eat lobster.
Dude.
He had lobster there, clam chowder, whatever you want.
He was selling out like that.
He had, it's where Jay Leno's from.
Yeah.
What's the name of that town?
Newton, Lowell, something like that.
Lowell.
Okay.
So he had like this built-in, next to it is a Puerto Rican town. A lot of Spanish people.
Yeah.
Next to it, so he worked off that. It was a bad neighborhood.
Yeah,
he was where Jay Leno was from, 4 blocks away. Like, wow, if you crossed the fucking road and you went 3 blocks, he took me over there and showed me his house. So that's it was in Jay Leno's hometown.
He worked where he lived.
He had
and he was pulling numbers like that.
He had Club 52 or 56. Listen to what he did.
Oh, wait. He owned it.
He owned it.
What?
So what he was doing was... What's it? What?
Well, the name... He's from
Andover.
Andover.
Oh, okay.
Club 56 was in Andover, Mass. So they had a rule. If you worked for him, you couldn't work for Bill.
Mm.
Bill laid down the law. But when you're a feature, Bill wasn't going to work you unless a headliner brought you to the Comedy Connection anyway.
Yeah.
In those days, they weren't really hiring features. Why would they bring a feature in? They got Boston's...
Yeah.
39,000 features.
Exactly.
But this guy brought features in. Because of that reason.
Yeah.
So he would do 7 o'clock in the run room was Tina and Tony's wedding. I mean, he went all out.
Wow.
Then the big room was the comedy would be, you know, Stanhope or Rogan or Gabriel or you. And then you would do 2 shows in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday you would do Worcester at the Aku Aku, a Chinese restaurant, always puke. They would drink those fucking
scorpion bowls.
Wait a minute. I know what you're talking about.
Yes. We all did it at one time.
Are you talking about the... I know exactly what you're talking about. And then you look on the tables and they had the lava flows.
The lava flows. And people would always puke there. So 2 shows and there was always a fist fight.
Are you serious? That was it.
Always. That was Friday nights. And then Saturday you headlined. But most comics got hit. Most names got hit. And they're like, we're not doing Worcester. We'll just fly in. Like,
yeah,
I remember Chris Titus said, I don't do Worcester.
Yeah.
I only do Andover Friday and Saturday. I can't take Worcester. A lot of guys are scared.
Yeah.
So he would headline. He would have Worcester Friday, his club Friday and Saturday. So the whole weekend, the guy would do close to 10 shows.
Jesus.
So one main headliner, Tina and Tony's wedding, a second main room show, and a local show. And then midnight was Frank Santos, or 11 o'clock was Frank Santos.
They have a few of those in Massachusetts, the Chinese with the upstairs is comedy. It's great.
That's fried rice crazy. And comedy. Fried rice and comedy.
San Francisco does the thing for Jewish people. They hire for Christmas.
Oh.
Bring Wendy Lehman up, a Jewish comic.
Oh,
and it's just,
that's funny.
It's a comedy show for Jews at a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, I love it.
I'd go to that.
When you first moved to Vegas, what year was it to start comedy?
1989. You know what's crazy? That it's so funny that I'm talking to you right now, because Steve Sciarippa used to book
The Riv,
bro, the comedy club, I think it was called, right? That was like Sammy Shore's room.
Right.
He would always go up there. And I would watch Schimmel. I would watch Slayton. I would watch everybody. And mind you, I just came from, you know, I'm still like 18. You know what I mean? So I wanted to be a comic. So I kept calling. He was the only booker that would answer the phone. Like, I would call every comedy club. There was a Catch Rising Star at the MGM. But I think it was it's Bally's now, but it used to be called the MGM. And then there was just other comedy clubs everywhere. Like Harrah's, I think, had the Improv. I can't remember. But I would call. I would just always call, you know. And then, but he was the only one that would answer the phone, the Riviera Comedy Club. And literally, like, every other week, I would change my name and go, hey, I'm a local comic. You know, I'd like to do warm up, like 5 minutes. If I could, like, MC, you know, I'd love to do it, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, we already got somebody, kid. All right, thank you. All right, bump. And he'd hang up. Man, finally, after like maybe the 6th month, after I've changed my name like 1,000 times, he was like, hey, look, kid. All right, you're not going to get in here calling me every week. You need to go to LA. You need to work on your craft. And then you're going to get an agent. And then they're going to book you here. All right? That's all I'm going to tell you. That's how you know. He was really nice. I was like, all right, thank you. He's like, all right, I'll see you in the future. And he hung up. And that was the last time I talked to Steve Sciarippa. But thank God he did that. Because I literally was going to keep calling him until he booked me. And then finally he was just like, that's not how you do it, kid.
Who was in your circle in Vegas?
Nobody there. I mean,
do you remember Sam Tripoli?
Oh, of course. No, but see, this is before that. Tripoli was like, there was a coffee house called Buzzy's Cafe. And it was a coffee house right by UNLV. And it was like, I can't remember all the guys. It was Rich, Sam, and a couple other people that were local comics that were that Stan hadn't Hope seen
was there for a while too.
Stanhope was already like our god. You know what I mean?
No shit.
Well, yeah, he was kind of like, he already had like, he didn't have TV cred, but he was already kind of like doing his shit. He was already like a name. Like if Stanhope was gonna go up that night, we were all kind of like, yo, Stanhope's coming. You know what I mean? You know how it is. We're all starting, and but I didn't get to meet them until later on. I was kind of like doing like these. I did this thing called Star Mania, which was a competition that my sister was in that she was singing, and so I started doing this. You know, I did the stand up there, and it was where you would go to like these local bars and do these talent shows, and they had like a comedy night. You know, they had the comedy portion. I did that. I did the Biggest Fool competition at the Tropicana. Do you remember the Tropicana had a comedy club there? It was I forget the name of it. It's gone now. It's the Laugh Factory now.
The Desert Inn. I used to do spots.
Oh my God, the Desert
Inn. For Diane Ford.
Oh my God. And are you kidding me?
I got booked one night to work with Attell and somebody else. It was a great weekend.
What year was that?
98.
Yeah, it had to be.
I had to get a tuxedo. I had to go down to Santa Monica Boulevard. There's a new and used store, a secondhand store on, I think, Gardner.
Yeah.
On the corner. And I went in there and it was a perfect tuxedo.
Yeah.
And I fucking got in there and Attell and the other guy had canceled, Artie Lang.
Artie Lang.
And it was Tim Allen.
Yeah.
And Vinny Favorito. That's who I was working with now.
That's crazy, man.
That's the first time I ever met Tim Allen. He was fucking gracious. It was a great weekend.
That's amazing.
But I remember all those little going out there and nobody would hire me. I still remember doing an open mic at the Plaza.
Yes, the Plaza, bro.
And being scared.
You should be. People don't really know now either. They don't really know that old downtown.
98 was scary, dog.
Yeah, man. I did a couple shows down there.
97.
But see, this is before the big dome over old Las Vegas. You know, right. Now they have this big
little dome.
Yeah, you could zip line now. It wasn't like that back then, man. It was, you know, it was a pretty scary area, North Las Vegas. The Plaza and the Fitzgerald.
I didn't know how. I remember doing a gig when I did the thing for Netflix and we went outside. Where did we stay for Netflix?
Golden Nugget.
I remember staying at the Golden Nugget. That's where we shot. We shot close to there.
When did you do that?
I'll never forget. It had to be 97, the Canyon Club.
Yeah.
Had a club in, it was like the Hard Rock in downtown. And the guy called me Lance.
Yeah.
Great guy. And he goes, hey, man, I don't know if it's going to work. How about I give you a plane ticket and a couple hundred? Just bring out a friend. We'll get you a hotel room at the Golden Nugget and try comedy. It was brutal.
Really?
Bombing bottles.
Wait, this was in the Golden Nugget?
This was at that club he had.
Okay.
Whatever the Canyon Club is, they had a version of that in Vegas.
Out there.
Downtown. And he was trying to promote it. He had the Plasmatics doing 11 o'clock, which brought people in.
Yeah.
He needed something at 9, so he wanted to give comedy a break.
Oh, my God.
So for like 6 weeks, we tried to book it. He would fly me in every Wednesday, and I would do that with two other, like, you know, I think I took Tripoli one time. It was horrible.
Wow.
It was horrible. He paid you like a flat 300, but it was... 13 people at 8 o'clock in Vegas.
People don't know about that old Vegas.
And I still remember waiting for a ride from him the next morning, thinking, like, I'm going to have to do something with my life. Like, this just isn't working.
Yeah.
I finally get on the road. I'm finally in Las Vegas, and I'm performing for 3 fucking people.
Oh.
And then I got into Vegas, and I got into that club with the swords.
Excalibur?
So Catch a Rising Star.
MGM?
No, before they went into the MGM... after it left the MGM,
yeah,
it went into the hotel that they give you swords. It's themed.
Is it Excalibur?
I think it was the Excalibur.
Is it the Excalibur?
And it had to be Monday through Sunday.
Oh,
Joe
tell
Coy,
me about it.
If I didn't get stabbed by a sword one time, I didn't get stabbed 200 times.
That's funny.
They gave me the keys to the employee cafeteria.
Unbelievable.
And I'll never forget picking up a piece of turkey, and the end had like a mark where somebody tasted it. And put it back. You have no idea. Like,
bro,
people really don't know.
I know that food cafeteria, by the way.
The disappointments.
Yeah. Like
when you're doing comedy, you don't tell nobody.
Nope.
Because you don't want your family and friends to say, you got to quit. You can't live like that no more, eating rotten turkey. This is shit that you can't tell people.
Nope. They don't know the grind.
Rogan brought me into that Riviera one time.
Mm.
And I had.
You guys played the big room with the upstairs. Yeah. Because there's two rooms. Right?
This is during news radio up at the top.
Yeah, so you get when, Rogan took you to the nice room.
To the nice room.
That's where the headliners play.
But I don't even know if you could qualify that as a nice room. I know I went off.
Back then it was.
I went off in there that time.
Yeah.
And then he went up and suddenly made a comment about Phil
Hartman.
Hartman.
Yeah.
And he went off in there.
Yeah.
So, like, the set was kind of weird.
Yeah.
It wasn't that good. But I never forget, Sharippa gave me the keys to the employee cafe. And that weekend was brutal. It was Friday and Saturday at midnight.
Yeah.
There were midnight shows. They're X-rated shows.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to wait till midnight. I didn't expect that.
You don't expect
to wait till fucking midnight.
Yeah.
I'd never done that before.
Yeah.
Like, I've been doing comedy 8 years, 9 years. I'd never done a midnight show. And to wait till midnight, I'm like, who does this?
Isn't that crazy?
But who are you going to tell? And who's going to say to you, well, you should quit. You should look for a different job. Like, I was heartbroken after I did the rib. I still remember going down there, and they too had turkey with stuffing. And the stuffing was rotten.
Yeah.
Like, I remember eating the stuffing, just throwing it away and going, I can't win. I couldn't borrow money from Joe. I wasn't that good of friends with him. Like, I felt guilty asking for $20 to eat. Like, it was just horrible.
How crazy is it that, and you know what's crazy is no one knows this reference that you're saying. Like, these kids now don't know that there was a Riviera. It's gone.
It's gone.
And they don't know that the number one show at that time was Splash. That was the running show that was at the Riviera. And then they had another one.
Now what was that?
It was like before Cirque du Soleil, it was a variety show. They had guys riding in a metal ball on motorcycles. They had go-go dancers. They had jugglers. It was just like this smorgasbord of entertainment. But they called it Splash. It was the number one Vegas show at the time.
Remember they had like a topless review?
Yeah, it was called Crazy Girls.
Crazy Girls.
Yep.
Wow.
The Riviera was the room at that time.
The week we did it, the week I did it with Rogan, we did Friday night, and then Saturday before the show, we went down to the bar to meet another comic who was in Vegas, Norm McDonald, not Norm McDonald, Norm, the first guy, the one that invented Smidgets.
Oh, man.
Or something, Norm something. He lives in Montana.
Uh-huh.
He was there, so we went down to meet him, and there was a girl that was a fucking 12. The body, she was beautiful. She was another girl. And she clung on to Rogan.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the security phone said, Joe Rogan, pick up security. Me and Joe, like, yeah, go pick up the phone.
And Joe comes back all uncomfortable, and he goes, I got to talk to you. He goes, you know that girl we're talking to? She's really a tranny. And I go, what are you talking about? Look at her body. And she goes, she's a fucking tranny.
He had no idea.
We sat down next to her, and we asked her. And she goes, yeah. In fact, I got fired from Crazy Girls. I'm suing the Riviera because they fired me because I was transgender. So after I got a couple of drinks in me, I'm like, let me ask you a question. Show me that little fucking bat between your legs. And she's like, I can't. I go, show it to me. I've never seen a transgender little pussy before. Just show it to Uncle Joey. Give me a shot. And Joe Rogan and me were looking right there. She had no panties on. She pulled back her skirt and she gave us a shot with that little bat. And it looked like somebody took a drill bit, the hole, whatever it's called. I don't know what that thing is called. And they held it out and they took it out. They took the dick off. They just cleaned it out and they like sewed a clit onto it.
Wait, really?
And they just put a piece of artificial turf, like a little, it was like a wig. They have them now for pussies. Little vaginal wigs. Have you seen those?
No.
You
no,
could shave your monkey and order a vaginal wig, and it has like little
where
designs.
Do you buy this? Where
I have no idea. I saw it on Facebook.
Wait, Joey, this was what year?
This is 98.
This is like before all the good surgery we have now.
Yes. Yeah, so
she was like a trendsetter.
She was fucking badass, and she was suing the Riviera.
The Crazy Girls.
And the NBC had given a developmental deal. That's when reality was going to start being big, and they were going to show her life and shit. Like, she could have been lying. Who the fuck knows? But that's the last time.
Yeah.
I walked into the Riviera. Once she gave me a shot of that.
So you don't even know she was telling the truth?
No, but
she could have been just showing you a really bad vagina.
No, she was real.
Oh, it was real?
Sharippa saw it on the security.
Really?
And Rogan, he goes, before you take her to the room or think, she's broken. The damaged goods. Like, don't take it to the room by mistake. She's a man that became a woman. Beautiful. With three drinks and a half gram of coke in me, she would have looked out. I would have tore that little man-made pussy apart. So, you know what I'm saying? With a couple of coke rocks and a Quaalude. At least you can blame it on the Quaalude. I didn't know she was a man. That pussy was good.
Yeah.
She had ice cubes in her mouth. Yeah. Whatever the fuck you want to say. It was fucking crazy. And it looked like somebody had opened their mouth and go, you know, when the commercials, in the cartoons, when somebody goes, ah, and they see the bell?
Yeah.
And she had one of those bells hanging. Like, oh, just like a little fucking bell that you went up to, like a gong, gong.
This is a true story.
That was the last time.
How long did you see for? Huh? How long did she keep her legs open for?
Like a minute.
Jesus.
Just show me the bat. She's like, I can't. What kind of person would I be? You'd be fucking educational.
Yeah.
I've never seen one of those. Show it to Uncle Joey. And she just took it, me and Rogan were howling. And then I wrote a bit about it. Like, I was like, you know, she showed me a little bat with wings. It was fucking disturbing. It was fucking disturbing, but hilarious. But enough with that shit. Today.
That's a great story, man. You're bringing me back, too.
Vegas,
like,
was
because Vegas was my that's where it all started for me, and to hear, like, you know, the Riviera and you and him shooting the shit at the bar like that, it's just like, that's old Vegas, you know.
When
that,
did old Vegas come?
I think the minute
for you, when did it change?
It changed. It literally changed when I left. I felt like that was the tail end of it. Like, I left in 2000. So, you know, once Steve Wynn came in 1990, I think it was 1990, he kind of turned Vegas into like a family town, and then they realized that, okay, this isn't making any money anymore, and then they went back to sex, drugs, and rock and roll Vegas, and I think that was right around 2000. So seeing all those monuments go, you know, Steve had a lot to do with that. I mean, I love Steve Wynn. I'm saying his name like he's my friend, but I love what he did for Vegas because I lived there, and my mom and dad, lived a good life there because of that. But it sucked because those hotels are gone, and that lifestyle is gone. That Vegas is gone. That style of Vegas is gone now.
What did you do for a living while you were?
I did everything, man. I worked at the malls that were there. The Dolphin Habitat at the Mirage. I was a tour guide. Oh my God, I did everything. I was at the Excalibur. That's why when you said you worked, when you went downstairs into that the break room, the cafeteria, I used to eat in that cafeteria. I know exactly what you're talking about. I worked at. Oh, it was awful, man. But I mean, I always knew that I was going to do stand up somehow in that city, and even if they weren't going to book me, that's why I started. you know, renting out theaters and selling my own tickets and stuff like that. So I rented out a theater on Charleston and Maryland Parkway. It was called the Hunt Ridge Theater. It was an old movie theater. And I would hire comics to come down and do a comedy night there. But I knew somehow I was going to do stand-up in that town. That's why when I finally got the Wynn Hotel that just passed like 2 weeks ago, I was kind of like, when I was on stage, I was like, you guys don't even understand where it all started for me. I was on Charleston and Maryland Parkway, and now here I am at the Wynn. So dreams come true. It just takes a little bit longer, you know? So
you've been in LA since 2000.
2000.
What made you finally come to LA?
2001. I just, you know, I had a lot of comic friends, you know, tell me, you got to get to LA. You know, you can only do this for so long. You can only book these shows. That's little money is what you're doing. It's not gonna enhance your career. You're just getting a little money here and there. But if you want your career to take off, you need to move to LA. Bobby was one of them. Bobby Lee was the first one to be like, get the fuck out of here, man. What are you doing? You need to come to LA. In fact, Bobby was living in San Diego at the time. He goes, I'm moving to LA.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's right.
Bobby was living in, he was like a house regular at the La Jolla Comedy Store. That's where I met Bobby. And then Bobby was like, you know, I flew Bobby out to Vegas, and I did this show at the UNLV, the student union. I rented out this hall and had this comedy night. I was going to push this whole Asian theme night. You know what I mean? I had Bobby Lee and myself and another cat named Mark Fernandez. And
Mark.
Yeah, you remember Mark?
From San Diego.
Yeah, from San Diego.
Sweetheart.
The nicest guy.
Sweetheart.
Yeah, man.
Where is he?
I don't know. I need to get back in touch with him, man.
Comedy store guy.
Yep.
Always. Really nice.
Always
Filipino.
Nice. Yep.
Very sweetheart.
Yeah, man.
Oh, my God. Nice haircut. Good looking.
Yeah, good looking guy.
Great guy. And then, sweetheart and then, of a fucking
And then
man.
Bobby had the big afro at the time,
yes,
and he always
did.
Wore the Hawaiian shirt. You know, this is before Mad TV. And I flew him out, and I remember at the end of that weekend, he looked at me. He was like, you need to move to L.A., like, you can't stay here. Like, this is not going to do anything for you, man. You're going to, I swear to God, he says it to this day, too. He goes, you're going to be shoveling tiger shit for the rest of your life. And
were you shoveling tiger shit for
what? I think I was shoveling tiger shit at that time. Ooh. And I was doing the tour guide. But I mean, basically the same thing. I'm working in some kind of animal habitat, you know? And he was right. So, yeah, thank God. Oh, no, this is before the tiger shit. I was doing something else at that time. And Bobby was just like, you got to do it. You know what's crazy is I was on Bobby's
Tiger Belly.
I was on Tiger Belly. I'm sorry, I keep going all over the place,
great.
Joey.
I don't give a fuck.
But I told Bobby, I was like, yo, man, I don't know if you know this, but you have indirectly motivated me so many times, and I don't think you understand it, because you know Bobby doesn't take compliments ever.
Right,
he's the fucking worst. The guy, something's wrong with him mentally. And I go, you need to hear this, bro, because you do motivate people. And your words do, what you say really does affect people. And that I told him about that when you told me that I'll be shoveling tiger shit. Yeah, you were being funny, but it hit my heart, you know, to see you get back on a plane and go to L.A. and chase your dreams. And here I am in Vegas just trying to be a comic. You know what I mean? Like that, what you said to me really motivated me. And then there was this other time where we were pitching a show in LA, and we were sitting in the parking lot at, like, I think it was at MTV, you know, we were pitching a show to MTV, whatever it is. I don't know what the network was, but anyways, we were in the parking lot, and we're going over what we're going to pitch back and forth. Right. And then he said something to me and I laughed, but I guess what I wasn't really listening to what he was saying to me, and he got offended by that. You know what I mean? And then he goes, you don't fucking get it. He goes, you don't fucking get it, do you? Like, fucking wake up, man. Like, it's more than this, man. It's fucking more than this. And he got out of the car and he slammed the door. And I was like, wait a minute. I thought we were just joking for a second. But I didn't know what he was saying was really serious. And I remember that was the day I made this conscious decision to, like, it's not about. And basically what he was saying is, like, it's not about the road all the time and about the money. It's about fucking honing in on your craft and showing the people what you have. You know what I mean?
Yes,
I guess.
Absolutely.
And that's what he said to me in the car. He goes, it's not about that. It's not about the fucking road all the time and making your money. It's about honing in on this craft and letting people know that you have this gift and show people that. That's what this is all about. you know, the show that we were pitching. And he slammed the door on me and he walked off and he was really mad. And I think that was the day I woke up and I was just like, whoa, I get it now. And I literally did. That did wake me up. And it motivated me. And I changed my way of looking at the road and changed my way at trying to put my mark in Hollywood. And you know what I mean?
You're still a tremendous road warrior.
Dude, I am, man. I am.
You love it.
I am.
Every week?
Every week, bro. I got to. And it's like I always challenge myself. It's like, okay, I'll ask the improv, how many did I do last week? 16. Or I mean, how many did I do last year? 16. All right, well, I want to do 17 this year. And I'll do it. You know what I mean? Because it's like I'm always trying to up myself. And
how many weeks do you average a year on the road?
Oh, man. I mean, improvs alone, I'm doing 2 weeks back to back. I'll do.
I remember a couple of years ago, I went to Cobb's and you had 2 weeks back to back.
Yeah.
I go, does he go home or does he stay up here for 3 days? I go, he probably goes home and sees his kid.
Yeah. I'll go home for like 3 days and then come back.
Why were you doing that instead of doing the theater at the time?
Money.
And Cobb's.
Money, man.
The Cobb's would pay you more?
Well, it pays more. It just does. It's not even Cobb's anymore. At that point, it's me. I take over the room and you just get more money that way. It's just, it's exhausting. You know what I mean? But that's also what I was getting at with Bobby. He's like, what are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like take the theater gig and then concentrate on this. You know what I mean? Audition, you know, go, man. And that's why I was able to, like, this special that my first special, the Live from Seattle with Netflix, I produced the whole thing. And it was because of Bobby yelling at me like that. You know what I mean? I'm not saying he's the one that told me to produce the Netflix special, but it was words like that that was in the parking lot that I was like, yeah, he's fucking right, man. Like if it's not going to happen, then I got to make it happen. And that's what happened with that first special. Like they said no to me. Netflix said no to me. And I went and shot it myself and sold it to him. So, and I don't think.
It's a good special. The one from Seattle.
Thank you, man.
Made me laugh.
They said no to me, Joey. They said no to me like 3 times. And I shot it myself. And it was so crazy because when I was performing that night, in my head, I was saying to myself, fuck, man, the only person I want to sell this to is Netflix. And they already said no. And I had so much money invested in that special. And it's just, my life was in that special, man. And I only wanted it on Netflix. I didn't want it anywhere else. So I got it. I was able to sell it. You know what I mean? So it was... I told Bobby that when I went on Tiger Belly. I was like, yo, dude, you're the reason why, man. I just want you to hear that. Like, your words cut deep, and it motivated me. Sometimes, right, people got to hear that.
You did 2 shows for Comedy Central.
I did two. I did Don't Make Them Angry, and I did Lights Out. And I still feel like Lights Out was like my best.
Really?
Okay. I fucking... Man, that was my life right there.
Better than Live from Seattle?
Live from Seattle. I was hungry, man. I love Live from Seattle. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like Lights Out was just like this turning point in my career. And my son was just going to elementary school. It was his first kindergarten. And it was just like the things I was talking about was just so raw and real. And I was just like, I love that special. I really do. It kind of hurt me that they shelved it and they never really aired it on Comedy Central because I really loved it. But Live from Seattle, like, man. Yeah.
I'm going to take you to prepare for Live from Seattle.
It was so crazy because I already had an hour ready after Lights Out, but they never came back with an offer. So I had to retire all that shit. You know what I mean? Because my son was too old by that time. If I would have done that on Live from Seattle, it wouldn't have made any sense because it's like, my son, that was 5 years ago. I think it was 5 years in between Lights Out and Live from Seattle. So it's like I went through like 3 routines by then. and then when Netflix turned me down, I was like, okay, I can't keep passing up on these hours. You know what I mean? I was like, I got to get this one. This one, I need to fucking make a special. So if they don't buy it, I'll put it on YouTube or some shit, but I need this special now. So yeah, you see 5 years worth of work right there in Live from Seattle.
I remember going to Cobb's and seeing those 2 weeks and thinking to myself, everybody's focused on Louis C.K. and Amy Schumer and they've kept the eye off Joe Corey. And he is creeping while you're sleeping. Because nobody's doing 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Cops. You know, they either go to a theater and do it, but nobody. That's a lot of tickets, 2 weeks of fucking cops.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's 450 a show. It holds 450.
Yeah, it's 450,
right?
Yeah.
Fucking 6 shows is a lot of fucking bodies.
Yeah, man. I was doing 16. I was doing 8 a week. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's what's going on right now over at Irvine. I'm doing 16 total.
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks total, yeah.
I saw something.
That's
like
five. That's Brea almost 600. Yeah, Brea.
Brea too. You're doing like 92 shows. And you enjoy
Ontario
that? Instead of doing one big show in a fucking arena. What do you feel? Do you
I think what it is I'm so addicted to the interaction and the improv, like ad libbing, and I feel when I do the theaters, I stay in my little pocket and do my set more instead of really like. At, you know what I mean? Like being loose, I guess. And when I'm at the improvs, I really just like, I don't know what it is, man. It's just, I'm not trying to do a routine, man. I'm literally just having fun. You know? I'm just.
Now, during the week, you don't go out to clubs.
No.
Why not?
I think I'm exhausted. You know, okay. I'm exhausted. And they ask me.
You do everything you do on the road.
Yeah.
If you're not on the road, you don't do it.
Yeah. But I mean, you got to remember, I'm doing 16, like Ontario. I did Ontario. 16 shows, man.
Now after you get off stage on Sunday, don't you feel rusty on Wednesday?
Nah, I'm ready to go.
I'm in a situation right now, 56 years old.
Yeah.
I got a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
I got a wife. I enjoy doing this podcast.
Yeah.
In my heart, I wish I'd go out 3 weeks a month, but I can't do it. It just wears me out. Like yeah. It's too much. 2 weeks is good enough for me. You know, 2 full weeks, 2 theaters, whatever the fuck. You know?
Yeah.
Look at last week. I got canceled Saturday. Atlanta shut down. Couldn't get in and out of fucking Atlanta.
What happened?
I got stuck in New Orleans.
I
finally got the 7:22 flight. Don't get you into Atlanta. And it stayed a half hour on the runway in New Orleans and another 45 minutes in Atlanta. And then I get to Atlanta and they lost my luggage. So we had to cancel the Tabernacle. And it broke my, you know, it just breaks my fucking heart. You know, like that. You have to cancel. People drove 5 hours.
Yeah.
They did all this. And that's why I don't like theaters.
Yeah.
I like going somewhere Thursday through Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
I like starting a joke on Friday and seeing where it ends up on Saturday.
Yeah, man.
But the agents talk you out of the theaters, out of the clubs. And they say you can make more money on a single night. And for a guy like me, it makes sense because of my daughter.
Yeah.
I get to spend more time at home. I get to go to her things at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
I get to do those things.
Yeah.
So I'm in a fucking pickle right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a life pickle. You follow me?
Yeah, 100%.
The podcast is the catalyst.
Yeah.
This keeps everybody in fucking business.
This is what's feeding
this
everybody.
Is the word. So this needs to be done.
Yeah.
I cannot do it with a gun to my head. You can't go while the flight leaves at 4. I got to come with you at 1. I got to rush you, not even let you relax, and then do a podcast and do the podcast knowing I got to get on a fucking plane.
Yeah.
I can't do that no more.
Yeah.
I used to do that. Shoot a movie and then run to the Comedy Store. And guess what? You fucked up both of them.
Yeah.
Because the whole time you're shooting a movie, you're thinking about your stupid set, and you did 90 on La Cienega, so now you think the cops are chasing you when you get on fucking stage. You're like, when are they going to get to the... You're not focused.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, so for me, number two, I don't think my act is where it should be. I got to be honest with
you. Yeah. That's where the improv comes in, though.
If you're not honest with yourself...
Yeah.
You never. I don't think my act is where I could charge you that amount of money for those tickets.
Yeah, you wouldn't feel right on the theater.
I wouldn't feel right.
Yeah.
I won't feel fucking right. So right now I'm in a situation where this year was just to go to a couple theaters, see how it works for me. This cancellation in Atlanta did not go well with me. You know why? Because I'm a first flight out in the morning guy.
Yeah.
That first flight is never delayed.
Yeah.
But I can't fly into Atlanta at 9 in the morning because they won't let you check into your hotel. So you gotta sit in the lobby with your dick in your fucking hand all day, go to a museum. I ain't got time to go to a fucking museum.
No.
So this is the dilemma I'm in this year. So I gotta make a decision for next year. I love going to the Tampa Improv.
Yeah.
I love going to improvs have so many great weekends.
You just made my eyes twitch when you said Tampa.
I love Kansas City. Oof. I love you go to these
clubs. How about the Omaha Funny Bone?
Oh my God, that lady is fucking the
Colleen?
Goods. Colleen, you go to these places, they're your home, but then somebody comes to you and says, what if I could knock 5,000 off that? You get less money, but it's only one night. And you're like, I could live with that.
Yeah.
I'd rather fly in Thursday, get a good steak, and then do Friday more. You get up Friday. If you got radio, you do it. If you sold out, you still do it.
Yep.
Those people were there for you when you weren't selling tickets.
Yes,
those
Joey.
Those people were there for you when you weren't selling tickets. So the weekend sold out, go down there. It's going to take you 2 hours to go down there and talk. You smoke on the way back. You stop at CVS and get some powder for your nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You always forget that. At home.
Don't do talcum.
No, don't
yeah,
do
yeah,
talcum.
Don't do talcum.
My ovaries get all fucked up, and I got to find somebody to sue. You know? You ever see that commercial? Are your ovaries fucked?
Yes.
And you're like, I use talcum powder for 35 years.
I did too.
My nuts should be radioactive.
I didn't buy powder unless it said talcum.
Talcum.
My dad said talcum.
And I can't see women. Talcum powder was the shit.
Yep.
When I was growing up in the 80s, a woman who didn't put talcum powder on their monkey, she was slipping, Jack.
Yep.
It kept it like a turkey. It kept it dry on the outside, yep. But nice and juicy on the inside. Yeah, Tell me. There you go. You got to pay attention, cocksucker. But now women are dying.
Think about the turkey comment.
Yeah, now women are dying. Right or wrong, when you take Saran Wrap on Thanksgiving, you put it outside the turkey.
Right.
It keeps the turkey fucking.
No. It makes sense. I just never thought of a monkey like a turkey.
You know, you got to, whatever. You got to look at things from a different perspective from time to time. What made you shoot this masterpiece that's coming out today in Hawaii? Fucking Hawaii!
I know.
Has anybody ever shot a special in Hawaii?
I don't know.
Who?
I don't think so. I think Elvis was the last one to shoot a special
Holy shit. Angela Johnson.
Oh, Angela Johnson, yeah. She shot hers.
Gabriel a few years ago.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, Gabriel, yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
How big was that arena?
This one I sold 4 arenas out. Yeah.
How many tickets per arena?
Man, I think we sold close to 24,000 tickets.
It Jesus was crazy, Christ.
Man. It was crazy.
I didn't know there were 24,000 people on Hawaii.
That's what they said. They're like, brada, we didn't even know, brah.
Joe Malasha, they gave you like a Hawaiian day.
They gave my own day.
They got rid of fucking Kempo. They said, fuck Kempo Day. Kempo ain't doing dick.
Yeah.
This motherfucker brought people from all over the South Pacific.
Yeah.
There's fishermen, Samoans are showing up.
There's Romanians here.
Fuck, Romanians, whatever Romanians.
They got Guamanians.
Oh, my God.
They had everybody there.
When Joe Malosh was telling me this shit, who's your manager, sweetheart of a fucking
Yeah, he's
guy,
great.
With all my heart. He was like, Joey, you just wouldn't fucking believe it.
It's crazy.
They came from all fucking over. How do you feel now?
I wanted to cry that night. That night was overwhelming.
You would get on a plane on Sunday and say to yourself, what the fuck just
I happened? Do.
Every Sunday. I get on a plane, I put my earphones on, and I go, what the fuck?
What the fuck? And it's hard to even explain it to anybody, right, Joey? You ever have a meeting with like the people, your team, your agency, your managers, your publicists, and then you just sit there while you're eating, you're like, oh, should I pay all these people? You know, it's crazy. It's even crazy to put your finger on that because it's not even easy to explain to somebody else. You know what I mean? That this is my payroll. I'm responsible for this right here. If I fuck up and I'm not funny, they're gone. It's over with. And it's hard to explain that to someone like my mother or my mom that's not in this business and realize that that's my reality, you know? And on top of that, I still have to take care of my mother and my son and my sister and everybody else.
Are you married?
No, I'm not.
You have a baby's mama?
And I take care of her.
How's
you know?
Her relationship?
Oh, it's amazing. It's fucking amazing. I moved her right next to me.
Every time she says something, you just throw a yardstick.
Dude.
It's $100 bill. Shut up.
She's half Filipino, half white like me.
Good, so you kept it together.
And I move her right next to my house. Literally, my son can go, he can walk to his mom's house in less than 4 minutes. And I told her that. I was like, no matter how successful I get, I will take care of you. You don't have to go get a lawyer. You don't have to do anything. The more successful I get, you will be compensated. I will take care of you. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to let my son live that life, you know, where he's, oh, dad's got all this. And then he goes back to mom's house. Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, we're going to be, you're a great mom. You're taking care
of
my son.
You had such an ideal. I'm very fortunate. I always say that somebody took care of me up there.
Yeah.
Whenever I leave the house, I go, God, whoever took care of me, take care of my daughter the same.
Yeah.
Teach me how to make a right instead of making a left. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always am very thankful. And you and I came from a very thankful career. We worked hard. We hustled our own tickets.
Yeah.
I used to do in Boulder. Because your Vegas was my Boulder.
Bro.
And I used That's to crazy. Do a Chinese restaurant in Boulder. A little guy, 5'2", his name was Ron. All he cared about was money. I want money. I want money. You make money, we do business. We do comedy. Wow. So I did the comedy show one night. He sold more Mike Highs than he ever sold in his life.
Yeah.
So he would call me every day. When we do comedy again? When we do comedy again, Joe?
Wow.
And I'll go down there. So I found out. He would say to me, can I talk to you? How much for Richard Pryor? That's a lot of money. You got to give me like...
This is a real conversation.
Oh, yeah. He would go, how much for Bill Cosby? And I would go, $10,000. Give me $500 now. Let me call his manager. Let me go get $500. He'd give me $500. His nights off were Monday. I would get any black guy I could bump into. I'd take him to the Chinese restaurant. I go, where's Ron? Ron's not here. Tell him I brought Bill Cosby. That's Bill Cosby. Oh, my God. All the Chinese people would hug him.
Stop it.
He was Bill Cosby. And then I'd go in there on Tuesday. I go, Ron, where the fuck were you last night? Bill Cosby came in. I missed him. You do that to me. And then he would go, how about Eddie Murphy? Give me $500. I'll bring Eddie Murphy.
Stop it.
Monday night, I'd show up with Eddie Murphy, some black kid that looked like Eddie Murphy. And I'd go in there Tuesday, get another nickel. This went on for years. How about Fluffy? Tomorrow. I'll have him here this Friday. We sell 300 tickets. I make special. And then Monday, I'd show up again when his day's off. And then one day, I actually showed up with somebody. And I go, he wanted the guy from Monday Night Football. Rich, the guy that fucked up Monday Night Football.
What?
His brother owns the Cap City. Really nice. Rich Miller.
Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller had Monday Night Football.
Oh, my God, he did.
So one night he came to me and goes, I want Dennis Miller. He's a funny guy. I go, I'll get him here next week. I showed up on a Monday with some white guy. He was there that night. That's not Dennis Miller, you fuck.
You fucking asshole. I want my money back for Bill Cosby. I want my money back for Eddie Murphy.
Oh, I had Lenny Bruce in there. Oh, I had the Smothers Brothers. Shit. Anybody he wanted, I would bring him. The easy acts were the black ones because, you know, in Chinese people's eyes, all blacks look the same.
Jesus Christ. I'm surprised you just didn't use the same black guy every time.
Oh, my God. You cannot believe this went on. He had a beautiful Chinese restaurant across from a hot dog place called Mustard's Last Stand. Delicious hot dogs with jalapenos, yeah. Chicago style with pickles. And
where's this at?
Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, my God. This is a real story.
It's a real fucking story.
Right. I don't want to leave here, Joey. Go, that fucker fell for it.
Oh, my God. Hilarious. I used to do
this is really... And he would pay you for this? I borrowed
$5,000 from him.
Jesus.
Every week to do coke. I mean, Ron, who do you want this week? I want Richard Pryor. He's a funny guy. He lit himself on fire. He's half Chinese. I'll be here. I'll be here in 2 weeks. I'll have him here. Then I show up on a Monday. I told you Friday. Monday, nobody comes to restaurant. We can only do comedy on Mondays. You pay $10,000. That's a Monday night. You want Friday night? That costs you $100,000. And I'm waiting for him to give me an envelope.
We only sent 160 people.
He never fucking questioned me at all.
Didn't give a shit.
Bastard.
We'll make our money back in food.
And I had another brother who was working him on neon because he loved neon.
Yeah.
Chinese people love neon, so he wanted wonton soup neon.
What do you mean neon?
Neon that you press
like the open sign.
Open sign. So my buddy was the one who put me on to him because he was working him for years. He wanted to open in Chinese. He would fuck up the letters and come back and hit him up for another deposit. It was crazy. We were mugging Ron on a daily, weekly fucking basis.
No wonder he needed so much money.
Yeah, oh, please. We used to, and he did
dumpling
great
soup in neon.
Well, he did great fucking business there.
Everything was in neon. Dumpling soup.
He wanted everything in neon. He was so fucking crazy. Open now, happy hour, buffet bar. He wanted everything. Like, he wanted a light over his bar. It was called, like, I don't know, Confucius something. He really did.
There's nothing there now. He's gone?
I have not been there in 15 years to see what's... I've been to Boulder, but not on that side. It's towards the college. It's right up the bottom from the university. So I think it's Arapahoe, Whole Foods. It was like a little...
He has like a new restaurant with like a wall of fame of just black people. But it's like he says, oh, that's Bill Cosby. That's Richard Pryor.
I am, like I was saying, you have the perfect career. Like the way you came up, you did your apprenticeship in Vegas. You rented out your own fucking rooms. You sold tickets. Then you came to L.A. You went to the Laugh Factory, correct?
Yeah, man.
Laugh Factory guy.
I used to hand out cards out front all day. Oh, every set. Yeah, man. I would hand out cards left and right. You know what's crazy, Joey? I was doing a show And the girl's name is Mindy. She DMs me all the time. But she came to a show, and she's one of those people that kept my card that I handed out outside of the Laugh Factory, along with like a DVD that I made that I burnt myself in my room, in my living room. And she still had that copy. And I was like, what the fuck? You still held on to that? So she had. So it's cool to actually see that it's still, to this day, it's still making its mark for me. That my hustle, my drive, you know what I mean? I was handing that shit out.
And you served an apprenticeship with Carlo. You opened for a couple people.
Bro, that was crazy.
That was crazy. Yeah. Those were big crowds. You learned a lot.
A lot.
But you were ready. You were at the 10-year mark. You could handle those theater crowds and those audiences. And how was that? It was like the same apprenticeship I had under Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Same type of apprenticeship, you know? 8 shows, sold out, Fear Factor, people everywhere. And you're like the fucking feature act.
Yeah.
With your eyes wide open.
And they're just, and he's handing it to you. That's the beautiful thing that Joe did for you. Like, here. You know, and that's something you got to learn how to accept. Like, you know, appreciate that he's handing that to you. And you take advantage of it. You're not taking advantage of it, but he's giving you an opportunity to shine, and you shine. Right? Like, this is his.
First 3 weeks, you're like, well, you don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
Then you go, I understand what I have to do now.
Yeah.
You understand your job. You know,
yeah.
I find myself, what I do on the road 60% of the times is what I learned with Joe that I wouldn't do when I was with him. Like when he would call me and say, let's go to the gym. I'd tell him, go to the gym by yourself.
Yeah.
I'm on vacation. I'm going to go to the gym and work out. What are you, retarded? Meanwhile, I'm 400 pounds smoking cigarettes in a fucking room.
That's crazy.
And he's down there lifting weights. And you're like, why would he lift weights on the road? Who does this?
That's nuts.
Who works out on the road? You go on the road to fucking go to orgies and fucking eat Chinese food.
Yeah, that's what I did.
And then you're like, oh, shit.
Now you understand.
Carry yourself.
You
know, we were talking about before the podcast, you want to smoke pot, you know. People come up to you and give you a hug, and after the hug, they tell you, my kids just got out of the hospital. They all had the pneumonia for a week. And you're like, thanks for hugging me.
Yeah. Thanks for smearing that on my chest.
I got a meeting with ABC on Wednesday. I guess I'm not making that fucking meeting. Because you want to fucking hug me and breathe on my neck and tell me, what about the people with armpit odor? You ever have an armpit? You take a show. I love people. I love humans. I love taking pictures of people. But I had to stop taking pictures of people in between the first and second.
Yeah.
Because I would get armpit on my neck, and then you got to go on stage with that armpit. Like, you try to wash it off, but that whiff goes in your nose.
Yep. How about wet hand?
Oh, my God.
Ah, man. That's why.
Wet hand don't bother me.
Wet hand bothers me bad.
I boil my hands afterward. I put it as hot as I can, and I leave my hands under there. I put the germ stuff like 2 minutes on afterward. I just boil my fucking hands in between the crevices because that's where those flu germs develop. What about your kid when he was 4 or 5 and you take, every time I shake my daughter's hands, my whole central nervous system collapses.
Just collapses.
Because I know she's got every form of fucking influenza on her fucking hand.
Everything.
Every time she went to that park and came in and tried to hug me. I saw you on that monkey bar.
Yeah.
That's got more fucking germs on it than a men's fucking latrine at Port Authority. Go wash your fucking hands. Yeah. You filthy little fuck. I smelled my daughter's hair after school. It's like, well, you've been lighting fires. Did you hear what happened on Lancashire?
No. What happened?
Tokyo Delve. He tried to arson it. Why do Japanese people try to commit arson? This is the third Japanese person.
What?
In the last 5 years. That tried to burn down. Me and Ralphie walked into a restaurant once. We used to go every day. Helen was her name. Hot.
Yeah.
She had to be 50. Banging.
Yeah.
She would come over to the table and talk to us. It was all you could eat sushi. I'd bring Ralphie in there, and they would all fucking hold their heads and shit. We were like, we're $22 all you could eat for lunch. We would kill them.
Yeah.
Kill them just on the albacore. Just on the albacore.
Yeah.
Kill them. The one on Lancashire over here, the crust and the haha.
Right.
It's fucking mediocre sushi, but they have mussels with cheese on them. They only give you 4 of them.
Yeah.
I would go in there and say, fuck the thing. You want spider roll? Fuck you.
No. That fills you up.
I want 8 fucking muscles. And they got sick of bringing me muscles. They stopped. But anyway, make a long story short.
But they lit that place on fire?
Fucking Tokyo Dells. He got beat up by the guy that owns Joe's Coffee. My Muay Thai teacher showed me the video today on the news.
I didn't see that.
Because the guy didn't pay rent for 9 or 10 months. And then they kept telling him, like, he kept fucking with the landlord and shit. The smoothie place went down. What? Remember the smoothie place I told you I just went to? That the fucking acai and the sugar? Done. Tokyo Dells. Done. Joe's Cafe, where Bill Burr used to do comedy. The guy, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. The guy that's Damone.
Yeah.
Owned it first. And he's friends with Bill, so Bill would do comedy there. Done. Burnt.
Holy shit.
What?
You gotta, they closed Lancashire yesterday. Where the fuck were you?
Here.
That's what your job is.
I live near Lancashire.
Yeah, Lancashire was shut yesterday.
What?
I did not know this till this morning.
Oh, I gotta see this. Who the fuck burns something down?
At a sushi place. You got no excuse. You got nowhere to go. My, I had a fire. Can I go with you? Isn't this a sushi place? What fire are you talking about? When did you light a fucking match?
Unbelievable. This is sushi. Yeah.
He burnt it down. He tried to arson it.
Oh, my God.
On the news. There's videos and everything of them chasing the owner and pushed him. It's like the guy that shot David fucking Ortiz. He's still in critical condition. They broke his legs.
Oh, they got him?
The guy that shot David Ortiz, the accomplice. On the World News Tonight, they said when we got to the accomplice, he couldn't say much. Those Dominicans
beat the shit out of him.
Beat the shit out of him. Joe Coy, it has been a pleasure.
Oh, man.
You always have family here. It's called Coming Out Hot.
Yeah.
Coming Out Motherfucking Hot.
Yeah, man.
In Hawaii, not since fucking Elvis. Elvis. You know, when you said Elvis, you have to look that up.
Do you remember that? I used to Elvis watch that Live, left and right. Elvis that special Live was in so Hawaii good.
Was the most viewed pay-per-view till 10 years ago. Something broke the record. I just saw it maybe 2 months ago on TV that they said, when it was the HBO documentary on Elvis, part one and part two.
Oh, I got to watch this.
When they said, when he came back, when they realized he was done, they said one last thing. Then he did a live remote from Hawaii that was pay-per-view.
Yeah, man.
And it was the biggest.
Yeah.
They showed Hawaii, and they showed, like, wires where countries. It was fucking amazing. Everybody got that
paper. Yo, I love that. That was one of my favorite things to watch when I was a kid. My mom loved that special.
I loved Elvis.
Oof.
And I loved Elvis's movie, which they don't play no more.
Which one?
They don't play him.
They don't, huh?
When I was growing up, you always had Elvis.
Always
week,
had it
twice
on.
Twice a week. Mm-hmm. Elvis week. And Gidget. Gidget goes to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Gidget gets her ass eaten.
Yeah.
There's always a Gidget movie. Gidget gets fucked in the ass. Gidget and fucking whatever were huge.
Yeah.
And now they don't show you Elvis week anymore.
They don't.
It pisses the fucking. It does something to my heart. You are one of the hardest working guys.
Thank you.
To come in this office. All the success you have is due to you. You're sincere. You're a good friend. You help a lot of people. And you make those fucking, it's you and Pacquiao, baby.
Thank you.
It's you and Pacquiao.
I love that.
And now that Pacquiao's on the way out, it's you.
I'll take
whenever
it,
I go to my, whenever I go to Mercy's godparents, you know, they have like five different things every year. Well, they just put the mother in for dementia, but they're from, I forget where she's from. They own the Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And
they own a Blockbuster?
They owned. My Mercy's godmother's parents came to this country from the Philippines. He was a janitor. She was like an office worker. They worked hard and they bought a fucking franchise. When Blockbuster, the whole family kicked in.
Yeah.
Everybody threw in 20.
Yeah.
And they all chipped in on a Blockbuster, and that's how they
got their money.
They sold Blockbuster, and then once they sold it, they got their money. They're very interesting people. They love that little girl.
Yeah.
But one time I went over there, and my wife, they're like, you know, Joey's a comic. Everybody in that room, you know, Joe Coy. Oh. Joe Coy. We love Joe Coy. And this is when I asked my agent, oh, fucking Joe Coy. And they're like, oh, forget about it. Filipinos go down there like Pacquiao saying fucking karaoke. Right? Remember Pacquiao saying karaoke?
Oh, yeah.
He sold more tickets than Louis C.K.
Yeah.
That motherfucker, there was a line from here to fucking Omaha, Nebraska to see him sing karaoke. Yeah.
Is that real?
That's real.
That's real.
Don't go see him play basketball.
Bro, he would fight and do a party afterward. The tickets tell him.
You're 100% right. And he had, and you remember he had the tape over his right eye.
Tape over his eye.
Have you thought about doing a tour with Pacquiao? Just taking over?
And carry that motherfucker. Like, he goes out and shadow boxes in the for like an hour.
Yeah.
What's his wife?
Every time I hit my punchline, he just throws like a combo.
Like his wife is the original Beyonce.
Yeah. Who?
His wife. What's her name? Like, every Filipino knows his wife.
Let's see.
Pacquiao's wife has a name.
Is it?
Mindy, Wendy.
What is her name?
Yeah, every Filipino knows her name. They got a picture.
Oh, my God.
You go to a Cuban's house, they got a picture of John F. Kennedy with a bullet hole in it.
Yeah.
Jinky?
Binky.
Jinky.
Yeah, Jinky. Every man. Filipino woman wants to be like Jinky. I want to be Jinky.
Did Jinky. You just call her Binky?
I don't know. Jinky, J-I-N-K-E.
No, Joey goes Binky.
Binky, Jinky. I don't know.
She has no nickname now.
She has no nickname.
Oh, my God.
Her name is Jinky, but most Filipinos call it Binky.
Yeah.
Jinky, you fuck. It's Jinky.
It's Jinky.
What the fuck, all right? Let it go. But you're the pride of the Filipino people, and you're a sweetheart of a guy, and I wish you nothing but success. And I know from watching live at Seattle, this one's going to be fucking superb.
Dude, thank you so much, Joey.
So please, tomorrow night, fucking watch this, whatever the fuck you download it, whatever the fuck you need to do. Just go to Netflix. You'll be on the first page tonight at midnight.
Yeah.
Or last night at midnight, you'll be on the first page. Hit it. Watch the special. I'm going to watch it tomorrow because my wife leaves for Tennessee, so I'm alone. I can watch specials. I can finish watching fucking... Anthony Jeselnik. I got like 10 specials on you that I haven't watched. But I appreciate you coming here, and you've always got a home here.
Are you still on Corolla's
podcast?
Yeah, I still do his off and on.
And then you have yours.
I got mine, the Koi Pond, yeah.
You do that every week?
Can you do it one time?
Just call.
Dude, I love you, Joey.
Just have Milosh call me. Or have Miss America call
me. Yeah,
yeah. Put it together. Yes. Thank you very much.
Dude, you're the best, man. Thank you, Joey.
So this week you're where?
No, I'm taking time off for this one.
How much time you got off?
I'm taking just this week, and then I'm at Thunder Valley and San Diego. Thunder Valley is crazy, man. That's like an outdoor venue. It's like 6,000 or something like that. It's crazy. I don't know how people stand in the fucking heat to watch comedy.
Hey, man,
it's in the desert, man.
You did 20 years of work. They come to see that 20 years.
Thank you, man.
So, like I said, anytime you want to come on, you want me on your podcast,
yes.
Just call, brother. It was a pleasure having you today.
Love you, Joey.
Good luck. Where can they find you?
Jokoy. That's everything. .com, Instagram, Twitter, Jokoy.
All right. I want to thank my man, Joe Coy. I want to thank the Christ Killer, but most importantly, I want to thank the sponsors who have our back year-round. Let me talk to you about something. Wiping your butt with dry toilet paper does not remove all the shit. If you got poop on any part of your body, would you just wipe it off with dry paper? No. Water cleans better than dry paper, my friends. Thankfully, there's now a new sleek bidet attachment that clips onto your existing toilet and sprays your butt completely clean with fresh water. It's called Tushy, and it's the best thing you could do for your little fucking filthy muffler, okay? Tushy sprays fresh water into your asshole to take away all the UTIs, the itchy assholes, the skid marks, yeast infections, hemorrhoids. That's what Tushy does for you. Wet wipes are worse for the environment than toilet paper. They're terrible for the environment, and they cause fucking anal fissures. You don't want that type of fucking anus fissuring, do you? So go to HelloTushy.com right now. They got bidets starting at fucking $69, and they run with a 90-day back guarantee. But let me tell you something, Lee. How long have you had your bad day for?
Years.
I've had mine for years. Does your big ass crack it?
No.
Neither does mine. So that just goes to show you it's fucking quality. We both got motherfucking bidets. I don't know about Lee's neck, but I know his asshole smells tip-top Magoo. Why? Because he's got the Hello Tushy bidet. Right now, they got a Father's Day bundle that includes a Tushy bidet to upgrade your toilet to a porcelain fucking throne for a king. Don't you want that for your father? It comes with bamboo bum towels made of 100% bamboo fibers, a Tushy travel case. You can take your little Tushy fucking anywhere. And also, you got to ask my butt t-shirt that you know your father's got a sense of humor. All these items bundled together, I'm going to give them to you for $125 for dad. If your dad's not worth $125, you're a sack of shit. So do me a favor. Go to HelloTushy.com right now. Preston Church. And get 10% off your order. Do you look forward to pooping? Get your fucking Tushy. You're going to fucking run home to take a shit. Because when that little water hits your asshole, there's no better feeling. You understand? But hey, we could talk till your eyes are green. Go to HelloTushy.com right now. Go look at the great selection of bidets they got starting at $69. You see something you want for dad? Hook them up. All right? It's fucking Father's Day.
you know, go fucking stop being such a fucking cheapskate. So go to HelloTushy.com right now, press in
church,
and get 10% off your order for that. If you're not doing it for yourself, do it for that. Get him a bidet and get yourself one. You've been looking like a stinky-ass motherfucker yourself. The church is also brought to you by Onnit. When it comes to supplements, this is my company. I've been working with them for 7 fucking years. And I'll tell you what, from the protein powder to that old chocolate powder they used to have that tasted cacao, whatever the fuck it was, to the Shroom Tech Sport, the Shroom Tech Immune, they have DMT. I mean, not DMT. That oil that you put in your coffee in the morning.
MCT.
MCT. Listen, Onnit is the leader in fucking supplements. How do I know? Because I fucking live it, motherfuckers. The Alpha Brain is their flagship product. If it doesn't work for you, if you don't like it, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee and they don't want the product back. Who else does that? Nobody, you filthy fucking animals. Go to Onnit.com right now. I can't help you with the kettlebells and the club bells, but as far as the supplements are concerned, I got your back. Go to Onnit.com right now and press in
church
on the way out to get 10% off your order delivered right to your house. I want to thank Hello Tushy. I want to thank Onnit. Most importantly, I want to thank you guys for having my back. Do not forget, this Saturday night, I am at the Ice House Comedy Club. And then on the 29th and 30th, I'm at the Columbus motherfucking Funny Bone. I'm still waiting for a makeup date for Atlanta. I'll keep you guys posted because we're looking for a Saturday so all you guys that drove could still come out to the show. You know, I appreciate you with all my heart, and I'm very sorry about what happened with Delta. Delta made good. Everybody's happy. You can't control the weather. Stay black, you bad motherfuckers. I'll be at the Ice House Saturday night and the Columbus Funny Bone on the 29th and 30th. Get your motherfucking tickets. That's it. I want to thank Joe Coy. I want to thank the Christ Killer. And I want to thank you motherfuckers for being loyal and for giving us a shot, for listening every week. Stay black. Have a great week. We'll see you Monday morning. Tip top motherfucking Magoo. Kick this fucking mule, Lee. That's it. Man.
Good, and you cut me down, so I string you up to keep you hanging around. You dish the hot stuff up, but you keep me waiting, so I'll play it dirty till your body is breaking. We've got to make love, the time is right. We've got to make love tonight. Your desire takes over.